Now, the second aspect that we come is risk assessment. So once we've identified all the critical information security assets and we have made policies and procedures for each one of them, we have ensured that there is a team, there is a structure who is responsible for information security at the first level. They have their job description, they are aware, so they have accountability, and then they are taught how to gather evidences which should withstand the legal scrutiny of the country and to the vendors in case required. Second aspect that comes up is the risk assessment of the entire thing. So what are the basic definition in risk assessment? Because it is information risk, cyber risk, digital risk, it has some definitions and some elements. Therefore, there is separate definitions for it. So we'll go through it one by one. First is vulnerability. What does vulnerability mean? It means a loophole or weakness in the system. So if someone says that your system has vulnerability, means there is a loophole or a weakness in the system. It could be as simple as user ID. It could be as complex as cross-site scripting. Or it could be as mundane as you've allowed the file directory to be visible at the browser level. But vulnerability means there is a weakness in the system. Now, threat. So what is the threat? A potential danger that is associated in case I find your system, there's a weakness or a loophole in the system and I exploit it or I try to make use of it. Then what is the danger associated with it? So for example, if I am able to get into the file system of your server, I will be able to access all your data on the server. So that becomes a threat for that vulnerability. Threat agent. Now who can become a threat agent and take advantage of this vulnerability? Whether it is a person, whether it is a system, whether it is an organization, whether it is a government, who can become the things which takes advantage of this vulnerability is known as threat agent. Impact of this vulnerability. So impact is either loss of CIA triad, which is confidentiality, integrity or availability, or loss of income, life or property. What is the impact of this vulnerability is we have to understand. That is why the impact covers all of this. Then the risk. What is the likelihood of this threat agent exploiting the vulnerability and the corresponding business impact that it generates? So risk as a definition is treated as likelihood of the event happening into the impact of that event happening, and you will get a ratio around it or a percentage around it. Now, what are the controls that you have implemented so that this vulnerability, this threat agent does not take advantage of any vulnerability known or unknown, and or you reduce the impact of any exploitation? So those kind of control countermeasures means those action solution in place to reduce risk as per the organization risk appetite. What are the standards emphasizing this risk assessment? As I said, in case you're starting new or you want to adhere to already globally well accepted practices, so there are various standards for it. So there is an ISO standard, so ISO 27001, 27002 and 27005 highlights the necessity of conducting a risk assessment before implementing controls. So there they define how to do it, what to do, the entire process as it is explained in the next point. So risk management process. So it says, okay, identify the asset, value the asset, do the threat assessment of that asset, see if there is any vulnerability to that asset, calculate the impact, see what are the control opportunities or options you have available and implement one of them and see if it is effective in the implementation and have you been able to reduce the impact or reduce the threat or reduce the vulnerability. So this risk management process, the critical part, it is not a one-time process. You cannot say that today I have taken care of this risk. Let's say I have bought a four-wheeler and I have taken the, I will not be hit by a two-wheeler and I will not get impacted physically by it. So that risk I have taken care and it will never change. It is possible that your car may have a challenge. The two-wheeler could be of a better material and can dent your car in a worst way. So you have to keep evaluating in day in, day out. So therefore, risk management process is an iterative process. It is ongoing because business environment changes and there could be new threats and vulnerabilities. Some of the old threats can mitigate into a different kind of threats as well, which are more dangerous. So it is not that once you have taken care of a threat or vulnerability, it will not change. It can change its form and structure and become even more dangerous. And therefore, you have to keep evaluating it. And therefore, it is known as an iterative process. So what are the categories of risk assessment? So now, obviously, you've understood what is a risk. You have understood some of the definitions that we use as risk. So even in risk assessment, there are categories, very simple. One is a quantitative risk assessment and second is the qualitative risk assessment. Now, what is a quantitative risk assessment? Quantitative risk assessment means you assign some numerical measurements for total and residual risk so that it becomes easy for someone to understand how much percentage am I exposed, how much money I will lose, things like that. There is a number to it. So therefore, you try to put some quantitative numerical measurements for the risk that you are analyzing. You also include the cost for safeguarding that information. What is the value of information system that you are safeguarding? What is the threat frequency? What is the probability and the control effectiveness? Am I 100% in controlling it, 80%, 60%, and so on and so forth? And lack of reliable and predictive data on threat frequency and probability can be put there as well. What about qualitative risk assessment? So qualitative risk assessment talks about scenarios to assess threat seriousness and control effectiveness. So I don't put a number to it, but I create scenarios and see if this scenario were to happen, is my threat serious and is my control effectiveness? It's a subjective analysis which relies on judgment, knowledge, prior experience and industry information. There's no number attached to it. It's very subjective and change from person to person. It involves how do you find these risks and how do you assess this risk? You do a walkthrough of the scenarios. You do a survey, questionnaires. You do interviews and work groups to gather information on these various scenarios. So to summarize, I would say quantitative risk assessment, it uses risk calculation to predict the level of monetary losses. So there's a spelling mistake, but it's monetary losses and the percentage of chance of threat that can take place. And it is very objective in nature because there's a number attached to it, which people understand. In qualitative risk assessment, it is situational and it is scenario based. Therefore, it is very subjective in nature. And obviously, it does not assign any numbers or monetary values to components and losses. What are the key terms in quantitative risk assessment analysis? The reason why these numbers are put and the terms are used so that it is you have a common dictionary when you discuss with someone. So that's why you have to understand it. One is AV. So we say asset value. What is the total value of the asset? In case we can find out. What is the exposure factor? That means the percentage of loss the organization would suffer if the risk materialize, or also referred to as loss potential. So exposure factor is EF. Single loss expectancy, SLE. So total loss that occurred due to one incident in case it is effort, and you can calculate it by asset value into exposure factor. So you will get single loss expectancy. And then you have analyzed rate of occurrence, that frequency at which this specific threat will occur within a single year. And you also call this probability determination. What are the chances of it happening? Example. Then what is the annualized loss expectancy? Possible yearly cost of all instances of specific threat realized against a specific asset. And then what is your annual cost of safeguarding, ACS? So what is the cost associated in procuring, developing, maintaining control against the potential threat? The point that has to be noted here is that ideally ACS should never exceed ALE. As we said, ALE is the annualized loss expectancy, and ACS is annualized cost to safeguard. So the cost of the safeguarding of that asset should not be higher than the loss expectancy. Otherwise, you may say, why do I spend so much to reduce it? But in some cases, it will exceed ALE, especially when it is a compliance requirement. So in that case, you don't necessarily look at annualized loss expectancy and the cost of safeguard. You have to safeguard because it is part of the compliance requirement. So in that area, you will not compare this. Otherwise, ideally, this becomes a golden standard to ensure that you don't overspend to protect something whose loss is lower than the cost of protecting it. Obviously, it brings out an area which says you must have an IT risk register. So the topic here, the point here that we will cover is that there is an IT risk register and what are its importances. So IT risk register, obviously, it is a comprehensive document which must have details of all the risks that you have identified using any method, quantitative or qualitative method. Now, this document should ideally cover risk statement, risk rating as per a metric. So you decide what are my ratings, you create a matrix. What are your existing controls? What is your risk treatment plan? And even after implementing a treatment plan, if there is a residual risk, if left any. Risk register must be regularly, at least once a year, they suggest, reviewed and approved by respective risk owners. So two things come out, that someone needs to review it. So there is an owner for risk register. Someone has to approve it. That means every risk, you could have a different risk owner also. So someone who's reviewing it and owning it can be two different people. Now, every risk having high rating must be supported by risk treatment plan or RTP as we call it, to minimize risk as per organization risk appetite. Ideally, you would like to eliminate the risk, but in case elimination is not possible, then you minimize those risks. This is a sample of an IT risk register, how it looks. So as you can see, there is a risk number, risk details, active status, what is the impact, internal risk, what are the controls, after the controls, do you have a residual risk, if you have a risk treatment, and what are the risk treatment or any other notes. So this, a typical IT risk register looks like something like this. Then the next item you have to look into any information security plan is inventory and information or data classification. So how do you control your information assets? So one, you must know what are the assets you are doing. So that is, means you must have your inventory, and therefore you must have a detailed inventory. So how many servers you have, how many desktops you have, how many employees you have, how many other network switches, so on so forth. So all the assets that you have to have a detailed inventory of it. Also, you'll have to classify it based on sensitivity and criticality. So then you focus that 80-20 rule and you focus on the main ones. Now the inventory record for each information asset should include, it must be clearly and distinctly identified. Understanding the asset's relative value to the organization is crucial. Again, knowing the physical or digital location of asset is important for control purposes. You assign a security or a risk classification that helps in determining the level of protection required. You identify the assets group if it's a part of the larger information system. You specify the owner to ensure accountability and responsibility of the asset. And you designate a custodian who helps in managing and protecting the asset effectively. Now, obviously, as you would have understood by now, that information assets, you know, they vary in sensitivity and criticality. Therefore, you must align it to the diverse business objective to ensure that you cover the sensitivity and criticality alignment properly and not ad hoc. There should be no ad hoc classification of sensitivity and criticality. Roles and responsibilities. So obviously now that you have your risk register, you have your asset inventory, you have the criticality, everything there, then who's responsible for it? You must be very clear in that. So therefore, roles and responsibilities. So everything must be defined and documented for all the roles and responsibilities that are there, and it is communicated to all the people and the management. That is the first rule. Then major points are information owner. So who is responsible for organization, business, information, asset? Some places it could be CIO, it could be CDO, it could be CEO, CFO, whatever the organization decides. And then you assign information classification and ensure that it is reviewed periodically, at least once a year. You ensure that the security controls are in align with the classification. You review and maintain access rights for own information assets. You determine the security requirement, access criteria, and backup needs for all such information assets that you have. So the information owner, the information owner is responsible for the organization's business information asset. It assigns information classification and ensures periodic review. The information owner does it. Information custodian, what does he do? He delegates the to of the information owner, typically an information system official. So he's a delegate of information owner. His primary responsibilities are to ensure that there's a backup and recovery of business information whenever required. Then you have an application owner. Application owner is the manager of the business line accountable for the application's performance. They establish user access criteria, availability requirement, and audit trail. That is what an application owner does. So you have an information owner who in turn would have an information custodian. Information custodian will have an application owner if required. Then a user manager. So immediate manager, supervisor of an employee or HR official. He's ultimately responsible for the user ID and information assets of the employees. You must have a security administrator who sets system-wide security controls and administrates the user ID and who reports to the information security function. End user means any person, employee or contractor or vendor using the information system resources. And end user has to maintain the confidentiality of the login passwords given to that person. The fifth area of your policies and procedures will be access control. Now, why access control is important? Do you allow anyone at your home to come and enter your house? You don't. So only members of your family or the ones whom you allow to come inside the house, are they able to come? Again, of all the people that come to your house, do you have give access to your bedroom to anyone? Again, the answer is clearly no. Only people you know, people you stay with, are allowed to use the or even see the bedroom in which you stay. So therefore, you even in your house, you have a lot of these access controls. So people who don't have the key have to ring a bell. And then someone goes and checks and finds out who's the right person, whether the person has to be brought inside the house or outside the house. Suppose it's a vendor who's come to deliver, is an Amazon person come to deliver something to you. Do you get the person inside the house? You don't, unless it is required to sign something on all. Otherwise, you normally pick up your package and the person leaves from outside your door. So what is this whole thing? Now you replicate this house example to information asset. So for every information asset, there are certain people who have access to everything inside the asset. There are certain people who have access to certain things. There are certain people who get access only if someone who has full access allows that person to come in. And there are someone who comes, but you kind of say no to him or her, and the person goes away from there. Or there is someone whom you give some information without giving access, and the person leaves from there. So with that example, link it to the information asset that you have. So what is access control? So effective access to information assets is a critical requirement for information security or any security for that matter. But there could be now internal risk from trusted individuals. They pose an insider threat kind of thing. So the entity accessing the object could be a person or the system, and the object is the entity being accessed, could be a database, application, server or anything. So in information security, you kind of have different type of access controls. One is a discretionary access control. Now the access is decided by the data owner. So he says, allow him, don't allow that person, allow this person. There it's very discretionary, and that is normally discouraged in the large organization. Second is you have access control list, ACL, which goes. So if you have an ACL, because it is not discretionary, there is some rule for ACL, you can enforce the security policies. So example, folder, who can access the folder? So let's say manager and above can access this folder. So now the security policies can be clearly enforced, saying any manager or above designation can access this folder. And therefore, you can become finely granular in your access. The second type of access, which is mandatory access control. So there are some things which are required mandatory to do the work. So for example, operating system enforces security policy using security labels. It is normally used when confidentiality is crucial. For example, operating system level controls like administrator and all is required mandatory. So you change the ID, you ensure that the passwords are changed very frequently and bring control in that fashion. But they are mandatory access control. The third is the role-based access control. So access is granted based on subject's role or designation. It is also known as non-discretionary access control. RBAC is known as NDA also. So rules defined in SAP identity access management are normally role-based. The fourth type of access control is rule-based, where the access request is evaluated against a predefined rules using an if-then statement, and then allowed or disallowed. So router, firewall. So I am given a rule in firewall that you can only go and talk to this server. So when I log in and try to go through the firewall and access any other server, the firewall will not let me go it, because my rule is only allowed for a server A. So if I try to go to server B, C, D, it will not allow. So I am restricted there. So that is why it is known as rule-based access control. Because obviously not all rules can be put up, and therefore that leads to a lot of complications. So another type of access control which has come out of it is attribute-based access controls. So what happens is subject's request is granted or denied based on my attributes, my environment condition and my policies. So who, what, where, when and how is treated there. So I can allow access to critical device if the user resources come via VPN on weekends, but otherwise I will not allow it. The sixth aspect of policies and procedure are information security and information asset lifecycle. So in this case, the information security becomes integral to all stages of information assets lifecycle, including when you're planning for it, designing it, buying it or acquiring it, implementing it, maintaining it and disposing it. You require a systematic project management techniques to manage changes and ensure information requirement documents are met. So all the controls are at the planning stage and design stage are essential to embed information security in the overall information systems architecture. You implement solution should comply with the information security policies and requirements. Now, critical controls for ongoing support and maintenance should include a change management control to ensure continuous alignment with business objective, and configuration management controls to minimize vulnerabilities and manage configuration must be identified. You must have a deployment and environment controls to segregate development, test and production environments. You must have a patch management controls for timely application of patches, addressing vulnerabilities. You must have a problem management controls for identifying and resolving repetitive incidents. Personal security. So here it is about individuals. So you will list down who are the authorized users with internal access because they pose an internal threat due to their knowledge levels. So risk should include accidental damage, data loss, malicious activities for personal gain or institutional damage. Internal users can alter data, disrupt system, misuse resource or engage in fraud schemes. Exposure includes data manipulation, system disruption and theft of strategic and customer data. New employees should undergo verification of job application information. Background checks, credit checks and rigorous screening are necessary for privilege access personnel in the personal security area. What are the risk measures? So you do periodic rotation of duties is essential. Separation of duties, so different individuals for request and approval. Job rotation, interchanging roles after specific duration. Mandatory vacations are a good risk measure, which ensures critical operations are not hampered during absence. Split knowledge, so distributing business knowledge to prevent monopoly. Dual control, requiring two individuals for specific system access. The biggest example in dual control is a bank locker where two keys are there, and only if both the keys are rotated at the same time, the access is provided. Then from people, now we get into physical security. Now the CIA, which is confidentiality, integrity and availability of information, are vulnerable to physical access, damage or destruction. So if I'm able to get into your data center, can I damage the data center? Yes. Therefore, physical security becomes very important. So what is my mitigation of physical security? It involves implementing zone-oriented measures, with each zone having specific security requirements and based on data sensitivity and IT components in that zone. Critical assets have to be located securely to protect them from natural and man-made threats. Access to sensitive areas like data center obviously must be restricted, with detailed procedure for staff, third-party providers and visitors to even access or touch it. Implementation of preventive mechanism from various threats, including those related from environmental factors. So if case of flood happens, then what do we do, and things like that has to be listed down there. Monitoring mechanism should be in place to detect compromise of environmental controls, temperature, water, smoke, access alarm, service availability alerts and access logs. So all these are important. User training and awareness. So user training and awareness starts by saying that human element is the weakest link in information security chain, and because they are the weakest link, there's a lot of emphasis that are laid down on the need for both initial and ongoing training in information security. So then you advocate periodic updates to the program to align with changes in security, threats, vulnerabilities and the overall security framework. The user training stresses the importance of the mechanism to track the effectiveness of training program. It suggests using assessments and testing processes to evaluate understanding of relevant information security policies. It recommends making information security training a regular agenda item in information security committee meetings. The 10th item in the entire policies and procedures are related to incident management. So obviously, as the name suggests, that we must have a plan, which is the policy, and a procedure of handling if an incident takes place. Therefore, what is an incident? An event which will take place, whether planned in a very unplanned way. So which has a risk for you. So it has taken place. Now what do we do? So this management, incident management, involves developing and maintaining the capability to handle such incidents, contain the exposure due to an incident, achieving recovery within specific time objectives. Common incident types includes outages, degradation of service, unauthorized access, theft, data leakage, loss, malicious software, hardware, failed backup process, denial of service attack, and data integrity issues. So in incident management, there should be a clear accountability and communication strategy to limit the impact of incident. You must define a mechanism for escalation and reporting are crucial. Customer communication strategies should be put in place wherever appropriate in case there's any incident which relates to customer data or impact to the customer. Incident management strategies play a role in ensuring compliance with regulatory requirements. Okay, another point number 11 from a policy and procedure point of view is your application control and security. So as we said, as we saw before, you had people check, you had a physical check and things like that. Now, one of the important way you do business in today's world is using the applications. Therefore, your application needs a lot of control and security. So as it clearly states down that the institutions deal with diverse applications for various business purposes, which leads to complex challenges. So you could be using SAP, you could be using SuccessFactors, you could be using some other tool for core banking, for credit cards and so on and so forth. So every application that you use must have access control and protection across different data types. So because it has different way of accessing, different data access and everything, it is risking information and infrastructure security. Now this complexity may result in unidentified security holes, overlapping controls and regulatory non-compliance. So applications are both internally and externally sourced application software, and they pose obviously security issues. The exploiters or attackers can exploit the various paths within the application, leading to potential harm to the business. And organization assess the risk by considering threat agent likelihood, attack vector, security weakness, technical and business impact, like we have done in the past. So what it says to ensure that you reduce such risk, what you have to do is that each application should have an owner. So typically a concerned business function. Then the roles of application owners includes prioritizing changes, data classification, ensuring controls, and decision making on the acquisition of any new system that comes into play. So application system must also undergo a robust testing before implementing to ensure that it's compliant. Application systems information security should be incorporated at all software development stages, like at the time of writing the code itself. If you incorporate information security points or guidelines, then the probability of getting a vulnerability further down the road reduces. Therefore, it says you should incorporate at all software development stages to improve quality and minimize vulnerabilities. Then all application systems need audit trails with clear log monitoring procedures. So definitely not only application systems that are getting used, you must have audit trail and who's done what changes why, and a log monitoring process. So at the end of the day, during the time while it is getting done, depending on the risk that the application gives out or you have assessed it, you must have a log monitoring procedures. Now, critical and sensitive applications must have detailed audit trails, logging transaction details, user actions, and additional information like IP addresses to ensure accountability and traceability.